I want to welcome you to the Arrow Heights Podcast, broadcasting live from Arrow Heights Baptist Church in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. My name is Ryan Smith.
My name is Nathan Copeland.
And I'm Josh White. We have a treat for you today. We haven't had a guest on the podcast in a hot minute. And so I think it may have been a year. Has it been a year?
I don't know.
But we have a guest for you today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I would love to introduce myself. I'm Jacob McIntosh. I'm with Hospitality House.
What?
Wonderful.
He's got a great podcast voice.
He does. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have headphones on, so I can't tell.
You can't hear yourself, but it sounds great. You sound good, great. Yeah. You sound great in the headphones. Yeah. So.
Welcome.
Maybe a new calling.
Yeah, we do have a missions emphasis every month here at Arrow Heights Baptist Church. And this month just so happens to be Hospitality House is our missions focus. And so wanted to have Jacob on to just kind of tell us about himself. He's new to Hospitality House, which we'll get into that later on. But also we just want to give some FaceTime or ear time to what Hospitality House is. And so we'll get into that in just a minute. So we do have one question that we need to answer from the very beginning, at the very get-go. And it's an important question because everybody knows that I have a vice, right? Mm-hmm. And if I have any expertise with answering this question, I think it's me, you know?
Yeah.
Second to beards. Second to beard game. Although, Jacob, you got the beard, man. You're there. You're hanging. So the first question that we're going to talk about today is the question that actually came in from people talking about judgment for whatever reason. That's how the question was framed.
Glad this is what they took from the sermon.
From the sermon, yeah. They said, speaking of judgment, what's your favorite Brahms ice cream flavor? Now, this comes from our college young adults group, meets Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, and they were out having ice cream at Brahms and noticed there were like six new flavors, so they tried all of the new flavors, one of which is sopapilla cheesecake, which sounds pretty phenomenal to me. But what they want to know what our favorite ice cream flavors are. So, Jacob, you're our guest. Would you like to go first?
You know, okay, I go to Brahms a lot, but not a lot. And I tend to get like the mix kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think they have a black cherry. That's my go-to if I'm going for a scoop, is a black cherry.
So you're a fruity ice cream guy.
I am, yeah. Right.
What goes in the mix?
Reese's.
Yes.
Mm. Yes.
Absolutely. Chocolate or vanilla?
Vanilla. Yep. Every time.
See, I'm an alternating Heath bar and Oreo mix kind of guy. Yeah. Like, you know, I like the toffee, you know, I just alternate like back and forth. Like I'll get one time and one the other, but that's not my favorite flavor of ice cream.
We go double. We always have two candies.
Oh.
Yeah. M&M's and Oreo is a great combo.
Wow.
Oreo and Reese's peanut butter cups. Oh. Chocolate. Fantastic. Mm. Yeah. Here we go double.
Fantastic. Nathan, what about you, man?
Frozen yogurt.
Wait,
what?
That's not an ice cream.
Sorry.
Boo.
I'm sorry, that's not an ice cream flavor.
I apologize.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Twist.
Oh, you mix it up. All right. Yeah. My wife always gets the chocolate frozen yogurt.
So. Plus, it's like a dollar. I mean, maybe that's it. Cheap dad guy. So there you go.
Well, you know. So do you have favorite ice cream?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the wisdom of the question, first of all, because they recognize... They don't even say, what's your favorite ice cream? Say, what's your favorite Brahms ice cream?
That's
because
right.
Brahms is by far the best ice cream.
It's
the standard.
Bluebell, sorry.
No,
Bluebell. I like a good Bluebell.
No. Yeah.
I like Bluebell, but Brahms, it's a local standard, right?
What's your favorite Bluebell? It's like, what's your favorite AA baseball
two-step
team?
Okay.
Well, okay. Let's talk about the major leagues here. Brahms, the best... In my opinion, Rocky Road.
Okay.
No question. Followed by Cappuccino Chunky Chocolate. Mm. Not only is it fun to eat, it's fun to say.
Cappuccino Chunky Chocolate.
And this is the big leagues. Get out of here.
Oh, and it's alliterated, too. You should appreciate that.
Yeah, it's right up your alley.
You should appreciate that.
Blue Bell. That's all the alliteration you need.
Brahms.
You're welcome to have all of it.
My favorite is cookies and cream. That's the if I'm just indecisive, I always do the cookies and cream. And most of the time I actually do a cookies and cream shake from Brahms. Like that's just and I have them make it extra thick. So that's just and I eat it with a spoon. So it's like ice cream as a shake. So but I also like pecans, pralines and cream too. So it's hard to it's so hard to decide. Like ice cream vice, baby. It's good stuff. Hey, let's get into something that's more important than ice cream, which is ministry, right? Mm-hmm. And so the whole point of this podcast today, we do have one question that we're going to kind of wrestle with towards the end. It's more philosophical, like how do we handle certain issues going on in our culture around us. But before we get to that, we do want to kind of introduce you to Jacob and let him talk about kind of the stuff that he's got going on over at Hospitality House. I guess from the very beginning, let's just start. Most of our people know what hospitality is, but why don't you just kind of give us, you know, overview of what Hospitality House is.
So Hospitality House really kind of birthed out of Arrow Heights about 19 years ago. And so you have to take and correct me. I'm the new guy, so I still may get some of this wrong. But it birthed out of Arrow Heights about 19 years ago by Tony Moore and Brooke. We provide a home away from home for people in medical crisis. So we've got rooms down off of 11th and Victor, down by Hillcrest, and we provide meals, housing, prayer support, transportation for people in medical crisis. Mm. It's a great ministry. It's awesome to be a part of. We continue to grow. We continue to serve. We've stayed largely the same, doing the same thing for the last 19 years. New things on the horizon coming up, which is exciting. And it's a great ministry. It's a unique spot where someone's physical needs and their spiritual needs collide, where they are in a physical crisis with someone in major medical, which also leads to a spiritual crisis in many times. And we get to help them with that.
That's awesome. How many rooms do you have?
We have 13 rooms and a day room.
Okay.
So we can house up to 13 family groups. And then we've got a day room that allows day use, kind of in and out. It's kind of a napping room. You can come in and get a shower. If you're just in for the day and you've got someone, an outpatient or something like that, it kind of gets used for different things.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah. Hospitality House has been around for 20 years,
yep.
19 years, I think 20 years.
We're going into our 20th year.
Tony said that they made the pitch and then 19 years ago started. What stayed the same, would you say?
So what stayed the same? The mission stayed the same. The mission has not changed. We are consistently serving the same need, the medical crisis hasn't changed. The reaching people spiritually hasn't changed. Our location hasn't changed. Our admin offices have moved, but the location where we're housing guests hasn't changed. It is, we're plugging along strong and hard. It's grown a little bit. We continue to serve more and more families. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly because hospitals turn people over faster. Mm-hmm. COVID helped them figure that out, how they could get people in and out a little bit quicker. Which is good for us. It allows us to reach more people.
Awesome.
How many people over those 19 years has Hospitality House been able to serve?
A lot. a lot. Because I can't pull things up off the top of my head, almost 10,000 families.
Wow. That's incredible.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
It's just incredible. That number of people. That's just families. That's not even individuals. From all the counties of Oklahoma, 48 states and 13 foreign countries. I think that's actually a little dated. I think it's actually more.
Huh. Wow. Wow.
They come from all over.
Wow.
When you think about it, some people will come in for treatment here, or some people are, because I see the prayer requests that come through, and some people will be visiting family here and have a heart attack. They may be from out of state. They may be from out of country. And that happens, and they have no place to go. Wow. So we house them, or they're traveling through. We had one where someone was in a truck accident. So he was over the road trucker, and had an accident here, and so we housed his brother for a while.
Wow!
How do they find out about Hospitality House? Yeah. Imagine that you're not just flying in, and they see you driving down the road, and they're like, "Hey, let's stay there."
It is almost all referrals. So it's social workers in the hospitals. It's chaplains. Doctor's offices, cancer treatment centers. Because we've been here for almost 20 years, and we have relationships with all of them, and we've spent a lot of time not marketing, but making sure they know we're around, and so they refer us to us. Everyone has to come from some kind of referral, because we've got to know that they really have a medical crisis and there really is a need. It's all referral. A lot of social workers. They're the champions.
Wow, Well, so you're kind of the new guy on site, right? Tell us a little bit about how that came to be.
Yeah, so, well, that came to be because of you.
I mean, I didn't want to brag or anything.
I have a job. You have a job gotta, because of Josh.
Got to stay humble. I mean, hey.
Yeah, to clear the air here and be clear, Josh is my brother-in-law.
We're kind of related. Whether he wants to be or not.
I don't have a choice. Well, Josh knew I was looking for a job and knew Tony and put us together. And as they say, the rest is history. But my role is I'm chief development officer. I've been there since October, kind of the end of October. And really my role is I'm there to kind of keep operations running, keep the fundraising wagon moving along, to then allow Tony to free up to be Tony and to do some new adventures that we're looking at, some things that we're getting into, more hotel lodging, and also looking at some purchasing of some lands and doing some building. Okay. Because going back to that, kind of what's coming on the horizon is, you know, we've got these rooms. We have an 18-person waiting list that we have all the time. It doesn't go away. Huh. So the need is huge. The need is growing. Hospitals, rural hospitals close all the time. One just closed just a couple of weeks ago. I think it's Salisaw. I could be wrong on that, but one just closed. So the need continues to grow. So we've been offered a bargain sale land off of Utica, 15th and Utica, over by the new Chick-fil-A. So we're finishing raising money for that. And then the plan is to build a much larger facility on top of that. Mm. So my job, I get to keep things going so Tony can be freed up to charge ahead with those things.
Cool.
Which is what she's great at. And this is fun for me.
Yeah.
It's a great role for me. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So new facility coming down the pipe.
Coming down the pipe.
Is that going to be offices, housing as well?
Yeah.
Or just offices? Or?
That's good. Good. It's going to be offices, housing. How big the housing? We're not sure. More than what we have now. Probably more than double what we have now to kind of meet the need that we have, the units plus the wait list. Mm-hmm. It'll have offices so that we can have all of our offices and operations all in one spot. We're spread out right now, which is hard. And then it's also going to have a daycare is the plan.
Oh, cool.
To put a daycare in it. There's a kind of a daycare desert in that area. Mm-hmm. And it also will lease out that space and it will be an opportunity for a revenue stream.
Oh, cool.
Which is every nonprofit needs something like that.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea. Well, it's not my idea.
Yeah.
It's going to be really cool.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Going to be wonderful.
Well, obviously, it's God ordained being right next to Chick-fil-A.
I know, right? It's already blessed. I know.
I mean, do you even have to pray for that land? Like, is it just, it's just already pre-blessed?
It's just already pre-blessed.
It's just like Chick-fil-A. I love it. Well, so you, you came on for a specific purpose, right?
Yep.
Obviously, you needed a job, but they also needed somebody to put in your position to help Tony out for some future stuff. So talk to us a little bit about what kind of hospitality's next thing might be.
Yeah, so our next things are this land and building. That's pretty self-contained. It's going to be a big project that we're actively working on. The other one that we're working on, and we've already started, and it's morphing a little bit, is called Lodgingly. So about 2 years ago, we just kind of saw the need for more housing. We're not in a spot to be able to build them, and housing in a little bit different locations. So we started a program with hotels where we negotiate our rate down. And we're able to provide a reduced rate for people in the area who need a place to stay and can afford to pay a little bit. While Hospitality House is, we've got a suggested monthly or a suggested nightly donation. This hotel program is, they're paying a hotel rate. It's just reduced. So that started out, we had 113 people the first year. Last year, we had about 208. This year, we're on track for 330 people.
Wow.
And that's not even room nights. So it's growing rapidly. We actually have it set up where we generate just a little bit of revenue on that, which will help and contribute to go back to the ministry. The plan is we've invested in some software that will allow us to get access to the live hotel rooms, where it's very labor intensive right now. And mm-hmm. So this will give us, it'll be like kind of like going to like Travelocity or Expedia to book a room. It's just going to go to Lodgingly and you'll be able to book a room in Oklahoma, in Tulsa, And then the plan is that that'll expand to Oklahoma City later this year, and then probably Colorado Springs, maybe by the very end of this year or early 2006. And we've been invited out there by a nonprofit. So that's growing. That has the potential to reach a lot of people and help the ministry a lot. Mm. It's super exciting.
Yeah.
Super exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. Sweet. Well, we are going to kind of move into something a little bit away from Hospitality House. You're welcome. Yeah. Obviously, some of that will tie into as you kind of share more of your story.
Sure. Quick question, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah. I just am curious for people listening that a couple of my kids have had opportunities to go serve out at Hospitality House, doing some service projects. Yeah. I got to be a part of one of those just briefly. If you had an individual or a family or some sort of school group or a church group that wanted to come out and do something just to help serve you guys as you serve these families, what would that look like? How would they be? How would they kind of get involved in that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Call us and we can set it up. We love volunteer groups. We love youth groups coming and helping serving. They can come and help and do cleaning. They can help and just kind of do some organization. We have a lot of volunteer groups that will come. A big need that families have is food. They can't afford housing, let alone food. So the ability for us, we have a Meals of Love program where we try and provide as many meals as we can for families. So we're always looking for people, Sunday school classes, individuals that want to come and prepare a meal and bring it down to us. We'll box it all up and deliver it to the rooms. And we're always looking for people to pray. Yeah. They can come and write prayer cards that we distribute to families there. They can be on an electronic prayer list. Lodgingly is going to be, as that grows, that need for prayer warriors is going to be bigger, and it will actually go more nationally. They don't have to be in Tulsa. So those are the big ones: prayer support, meals, volunteering, coming and just helping with writing cards, helping organize, helping deliver those meals, helping within our welcome center. The team over there are awesome. We're always looking for volunteers.
Yeah.
Thank
the website you. Is hhtulsa.org.
That's correct.
Okay, cool. And I don't want to put you on the spot for phone number, but you can find the phone number on on the website. Throughout the rest of this month, the month of July, you can make donations to Hospitality House here on site at the church at the donation bins by most of the doors. They've also got a table that they're going to be staffing for the month. Is that correct?
Somebody will be there.
Somebody will be there.
May not always be me, but somebody will be there.
Could be a volunteer. Could be Jacob. He's got the fantastic head of hair and a beard. And so you can see him at the Hospitality House table in our front lobby here at the church. So awesome. Well, hey, just in light of events from this past weekend with all the things that have gone on in Texas, Kerr County, Camp Mystic, everybody's seen all of the news stuff. And in light of the sermon on God's wrath and judgment yesterday that Ryan preached, we thought it would be good to kind of just talk through what a Christian's response or approach to tragedies in their own lives and the lives of others should be. And we're going to let Jacob share as much or as little as you want. His life experience kind of speaks directly to both of those settings in more ways than one. And so we'll kind of allow him to speak as he's willing to do that. But let's just throw it out there. Like, how should a Christian address these things? And maybe you guys want to jump in first just to we've let Jacob talk a little bit. You can get a drink of water and hang out for a second and then jump in anytime you're willing.
Man, first of all, really wonderful sermon. On Sunday, I thought Austin did a really good job as well, just kind of leading us in prayer for some of these really difficult, horrendous, tragic events that have happened. For me, when I think about this, my thoughts, my heart immediately go to the book of Job. Job is a book that's kind of given to us, at least in part, to wrestle with things that just don't make sense and things that are extremely painful, profound in their just sorrow and suffering. And one of the most important lessons to learn from the book of Job, I think right when we open it up, is God is in control. That's almost a given, but we need to constantly be reminded of that. But for those who try to minister to people walking through such difficult circumstances, it's really important to learn from Job's friends, both their positive example and their negative example. The positive example is they just show up and they are listening and they are sympathetic and they don't try to explain stuff at first. In fact, at the end of chapter 2, it says they had made an appointment together to come and mourn with him and to comfort him. And when they raised their eyes from afar and did not recognize Job, they lifted their voices and wept, and each one tore his robe and sprinkled dust on his head toward heaven. So they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great. And I think that's a very profound sort of message there that we need to learn. There really are no answers. There really are no words. And so to kind of be there, just have a presence with someone, to mourn with them, is really the best thing we can do, especially at first. Not that we have no words to say, but to be with someone and to be that fellow mourner in this situation is really important. If you can do something. My dad was telling me he heard a story. My dad lives down there in Texas, not far. He told me a story about a former Navy SEAL, an older guy who was able to help rescue people. He just showed up and said, I have some special training underwater, you know. So what an amazing way to just step in and provide some comfort and some hope. So that's probably maybe the first lesson to learn, is just that we don't have answers. And when you read on in the book of Job, that's part of the problem with these friends, is they try to provide kind of a, well, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, obviously, kind of answer. And that's just not the way it works. You get to the end of the book of Job, and Job still does not understand what exactly God is doing. But what he does have at the end of the book is he learns more of who God is. And while that can be, that can feel very frustrating at first, I think at the end of the day, God is the only one who can provide the answer. And he himself ultimately is the answer, because he's the Savior. He's the only one who could ever restore what we lose and what we mourn in this broken world. He alone is enough at the end of the day to fill that gap and to comfort that hurt. So yeah, that's where my mind goes initially, is just the book of Job. And what Job suffered is very similar to what a lot of these parents are walking through right now. So God is very good and very wise and very gracious to give us a book like Job. But again, doesn't provide all the answers, but provides us a glimpse into his character and to show us all kinds of things that we know God is not doing in these moments. He's not necessarily punishing these kids or punishing even their families. He's not just inattentive. He's not losing control. He's not a capricious God, sort of, unwieldy and just sort of doling out punishment or something like that. He is the only comfort in life and death. And that's what Job ultimately drives us to, is to know more of him.
Yeah. Theology and our understanding of who God is and the way he works is certainly known, and it's important that in times like this, or just as we encounter it in the scripture, we reinforce the idea that God is good, that God is sovereign, that we don't have the answers, but God does. There's kind of, as you said in Job, so thankful for that book. But that's kind of what Job's friends eventually start to do. Say, well, don't you know XYZ? When while theology is known, it's also experienced, and the experience is often different than the knowing. While the two go back and forth, as well as hand in hand. And so when something like this or tragedy or is being experienced, you don't want to appeal to, well, God's sovereign judge of the world. You know, or looking at that's why I struggled so much with this sermon in light of particularly the floods in Kerr County. you know, because there is a line in there, you know, how can a good God do wicked things to righteous people? You know, when the answer theologically is, well, there are no righteous people, and that's what the text shows us, and blah, 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 blah. But when you draw that down into the world of what happened in Kerr County, Texas, that answer doesn't help. In fact, it does harm. Yeah. And that's what's difficult. As we know the answers, but how do we provide them? How do we live them, whether it's ourselves or someone close to us that we're trying to minister to? How do we live out those answers in a way that makes them not seem callous or makes them loving, to where we actually are mourning with someone rather than trying to answer a question on a theology exam?
Yeah.
So that's the difficulty. And that's kind of those are the questions that come up. And so Jacob, I'm glad that you're here. One, because this is really the place the Hospitality House seeks to enter for people. This is a time where we know, oh, well, this is great because people's guard is probably down. They're going through something they didn't anticipate. So this is a great opportunity to get the gospel. We know that.
Right.
But there's also hurting people who are very confused in your rooms at those times, and probably some of them don't want to talk about God in those moments. Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about, and relying on your personal experience as well, in those moments where we are experiencing tragedy or trying to minister to someone who's experienced tragedy, what are some helpful tools? Then also, what are some unhelpful tools that Christians might employ in order to help in those situations?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. That's a good question. So a little background on my own personal experience, and how it ties. So one of the reasons why I'm grateful and excited and feel God's leading to be part of Hospitality House. In 2014. My wife at the time was diagnosed with lung cancer. Genetic, her DNA just flipped. She passed away on Good Friday of 2015. 6 months beginning to end. I had a 9-year-old boy and an almost 5-year-old boy at the time. Not Josh's sister. I've since remarried to Josh's sister and now have two more little kids. Tough time, tough season. This fear of the unknown, the fear of cancer, and then her passing away. I was sitting in church and listening to Ryan's sermon on Sunday, and one of the things that stuck out and that took me back to that season was Ryan talking about that God's kingdom would move forward, God's kingdom would be glorified, that God would be glorified in the pain, in the grief, in God's wrath even. Different things, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to tie God's wrath to Kerr County. That's not the case at all. Right. But in that, in all of life, God's kingdom moves forward. God is glorified. And that was literally my wife Amy and I's prayer at the time, was that God's kingdom would be glorified in this, that God would be glorified in her diagnosis and in her cancer treatment and walking through that. We never, because it didn't matter to us, we never asked what stage she was in. I didn't know that till well after she passed away, actually. That framed how we treated it. It framed how we spoke to people. It framed how I dealt with the boys afterwards, that we just wanted to point to God in that. Even in her death, we wanted to point to God in that. Even in the pain, beautiful things have come out of that. Super painful, but I can look back now, 10 years later, I can look back and see God's provision, God's sovereignty. God never left us in that. Unquestionably, there were moments that it was hard. There were moments that it was scary, but God never left us in that. So to get to be a part of Hospitality House now and support that and support people who are scared and hurting in that is really a blessing. You think about like what helps and what hurt in that. For me, what helped was presence. People just being there. People just listening, not trying to answer the questions. They didn't have the answers, and I knew they didn't have the answers. Mm-hmm. Not quoting scripture at me, in all honesty. That may sound counterintuitive, but for me, that didn't help me. I knew it. I've been to seminary. I've read the books. I did all of that. That was part of my process in grieving. There were times that I helped people with that in my own grief and walked them through that because I knew it. I worked through that. Well, what I needed was someone to talk to. I needed someone just to listen. I needed someone. When someone passes away, sometimes I found in my story, in my journey, that people would avoid me for one. Because I maybe I just look sad. I don't know. Probably did. I was super tired. but they avoided talking about her. They avoided talking about the grief and the loss of that. Whether that was because that was hard for them or they were afraid it was going to be hard for me, I don't know. But that actually was hurtful and hard. It made it worse. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to talk to her. I just wanted to talk about her. Mm-hmm. I wanted to share the stories with him. I wanted them to ask me questions about it. Mm-hmm. Wanted to ask me questions about her. That didn't hurt me. It was great. It was like reliving it. There were times that my boys wanted that too. They wanted people to talk about her, to talk about their mom, to tell them stories about her. Something that kids are a little bit trickier. You got to really listen to them and what they want because sometimes they didn't want that. They wanted to just go about life as normal. Presence, listening, not trying to give answers. What you said, Nathan and Ryan, is spot on. Because the answer is God's in control.
Yeah.
God's sovereign. He's in control. He orchestrates it all. We don't understand it, but he's in control. As hard as that is, the other thing that helped me a lot, what I leaned on during that time, were this is my encouragement to the Sunday school teachers, in all seriousness, the Old Testament stories of God's sovereignty, of God's loving care that we learned in Sunday school when I was a kid growing up, that's what I leaned on. All those Sunday school teachers that drilled that into my head when I was the wiggly little boy that wasn't paying attention to, that's what got me through many a dark night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And isn't that just so, again, good and wise of God that he does not give us in his perfect revelation some sort of, you know, logic textbook, some sort of perfect, pristine, like systematic theology, just all laid out like in a syllogism. He gives us these stories. He gives us the Psalms that give us all this language of prayer and worship through every season, through every circumstance. The Bible comes to us, again, perfectly in sort of wrapped in practical, helpful theology. Not necessarily systematic theology. And I love systematic theology. Mm-hmm. It is so helpful to me in understanding God's word and piecing it together. But in the moment, what we need is Habakkuk. What we need is, you know, David in the Psalms. What we need are these stories of Jesus coming to these people and meeting them in their darkest time. What we need is Jesus in the tomb, in the darkest place you could possibly imagine. And what we need is Sunday morning and the hope of the resurrection. And that's how God's word comes to us, not necessarily with the answers that we might want. They're the answers we need.
Yeah,
that's something that's so incredibly helpful that you said that what you leaned on is the Old Testament stories from when you were a kid. That's beautiful in so many ways because, one, I think it reinforces the importance of a regular rhythm of being involved in a local church, talking about the stories of the Bible with your kids. And there are, I'm certain, so many times that people think, do I really need to go to church this Sunday?
Yeah.
Do I really need to wrestle my kids into this room and deal with the teaching? You know, what you're doing is not just rote repetition. What you're doing is preparing them for something that you can't foresee, equipping them with tools that God will use in whatever way down the road. Mm-hmm. For his glory. And it's in those moments, you know, like you said, had someone come and said, well, remember Joseph? God was sovereign there. Mm-hmm. That would not have helped, you know, yeah. at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
But in the middle of the night, when God reminded you of it, it helped.
Yeah, it did.
And so that's amazing.
It did. Yeah.
I think, you know, 1 Thessalonians 4, tells us that we don't grieve as others who have no hope. And I think knowing you guys, when you kind of came onto the scene and kind of came into our family, like we see these boys and it's like, gosh, you know, you want to have those conversations with them, right? And talk to them about their mom past. And yet it's just encouraging to me that God has redeemed even that most difficult of situations that you can possibly imagine. Like those boys are just incredible young men. And in some sense, because of what happened, like you were talking about resilience and just them, just the way that they've trusted the Lord through this process has developed them in a way that nothing else could. Yeah. And so just thankful that even as dark as something like what happened in Texas or the loss of a mom and a wife, that there's hope on the other side of it. Like to be able to hold on to that, I think is crucial for us to begin to be building that into our routine and our walk with the Lord before anything like that even comes up, because that's what keeps us going. So thanks for sharing, man.
Yeah, I'm glad to.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. That's huge. Yeah. So anything else we want to add?
There's so much there.
We could talk for hours. We could talk for hours.
You know, and that's the difficulty of it. But I think probably I want to take a cue from Job and his friends and just remind people that it's okay to hurt, that we will this side of heaven, and those things shouldn't draw us away from God. Because those things hurt God too. I love the other thing I referenced, you know, that continually comes to mind is Jesus weeping at Lazarus's tomb. Even though Jesus waited before he went to Bethany, Jesus knew what he was about to do, you know. But even his own sovereignty in the situation didn't keep him from mourning deeply. And not just over Lazarus's death and the sadness there, but just over sin and a broken world. And so I think to remember that is the way God feels, and that is the way that God responds to these same situations, and that he's right there with us. It's okay to feel bad and have questions and be angry, because Jesus is angry. At a broken world, and he's going to fix it in due time. But just also that it's okay to not have answers. I think, you know, Jacob, what you said is so helpful, that sometimes presence is just the best thing you can do.
Yeah.
And probably the best answer you can give sometimes is just, I don't know. Yeah. And mm-hmm. from what you've said, you know, that's okay.
It's okay. It was okay for me to say, I don't know. It's okay to not have an answer.
Definitely.
That's huge. That's huge. Well, Jacob, thanks for being on our podcast today and dealing
glad
with our chaos that we have in this room week in and week out. It's a great time. If you've got questions for the podcast, the number is 918-280-9628. If you want to connect with Hospitality House or have questions for them, you can text that number or you can go to hhtulsa.org. If you're looking for somewhere to consider giving towards disaster relief, Oklahoma Baptist Disaster Relief is on the ground in Texas right now as we speak. And so that'd be a great opportunity. We know there's tons of other ministries and opportunities that you can give to or consider just getting information from, but that would be one direction that we would point you to. And if you've got any other questions, feel free to shoot us a text. But thanks so much for listening to this edition of the Arrow Heights Podcast.